And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he with the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth here on The Awakening. Welcome, everybody, and thanks so much for joining us here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us. And I hope the day is going great for you. I really do. I have to tell you all, that news yesterday, which I really was able to kind of glance at it as it was happening. I was having some other things that I had to do. I was kind of glancing at the press conference down in Georgia over the shooting of this gentleman, Rayshard Brooks. But this morning, I looked at the whole thing because I had some impressions and I wanted to make sure that my impressions were correct. And when I looked at the thing from beginning to end and everything the prosecutor had to say, I just thought, wow, to me, this is a travesty of justice. And I just found out that the Georgia Bureau of Investigation was shocked that the county prosecutor had gone forward with this press conference because they have not finished their investigation yet. And they thought they were working together. So obviously there's some politics going on here. Apparently this particular DA is running for office right now. And I guess he thought that he needed to get out in front of this and charge Garrett Rolfe right away. And Garrett Rolfe is the officer who fired the fatal shots. And he's the one that he is really going after. The other officer apparently is going to be testifying in behalf of the state. And they say this is the first time this has happened. Well, it may be the first time that's happening, but I can imagine that the officer who is going to testify, my guess is he has been put under immense pressure not to be charged with murder. So here's the first thing. Well, you know what? Before I get into all of that, I want to remind everybody, because this thing is really, this is bad. And a lot of officers apparently haven't reported for work today. And you know, I've said this many times, and I have nothing but admiration for police officers, for law enforcement officers who put their lives on the line and go out there and do a very dangerous and difficult job trying to protect the lives of others. And this is not the 1950s. This is not the civil rights movement era. This is not a situation where legal segregation is allowed and police officers feel that they can do anything they want to do. I don't think police officers even feel that way, let alone behave that way. Overwhelmingly, I don't believe that. But they're being treated that way. And I've said this before, I wouldn't want to do that job. You know, there was a time I used to think, you know, I could have done law enforcement and gone into the FBI or gone into law enforcement after I got out of law school instead of practicing law. And I thought about that. I look back now and think, well, I am glad I didn't do that because it is a thankless task, a thankless task. Imagine what it's like to be a police officer getting up this morning, putting on your uniform and going out into the streets, knowing that if something goes down and you have to take action to save your life or the lives of others and someone dies in the process, you not only could lose your job, you could end up losing your freedom. But in this case, this is gross, gross injustice and overreach because they're charging this officer with felony murder. Now, I know you all know what felony murder is. I mean, it's one of the highest charges that you can level against a suspect, against a defendant. Because felony murder generally applies to circumstances in which somebody sets out to commit a felony, not sets out to murder someone, but in the commission of that felony does murder someone. And so they're charged with felony murder, which is the equivalent really of premeditated murder. You are treated as if you set out to murder someone because you set out doing something unlawful and you knew or should have known that it could result in the death of a person in the process of committing that crime. To charge a police officer with felony murder? which, by the way, carries the potential of life imprisonment, life without parole, and even death. Now imagine that. This police officer has been charged with a crime that could bring the death penalty. Now just consider that. When I saw that, I just thought, you've got to be kidding me. He didn't answer that call. I mean, he didn't go there on his own looking for trouble. He was answering a police call. Wendy's had called the police department and said, there's a guy asleep in the takeout line, and he is completely messing up business tonight because, of course, he's just sitting there. Police show up. They wake him up. They have reasonable conversations with him, trying to determine his level of sobriety or whether he is, in fact, sober. And apparently things go very well. It's very peaceful. No problems. The guy answers their questions, cooperates with them. And finally, they decide he's intoxicated. I guess he didn't pass the sobriety test to their satisfaction. And they decide to take him in. And when they tell him, turn around, and they're about to put the handcuffs on him, he resists arrest. I mean, he starts fighting. And I'm sure you've seen the videos. He's fighting hard. I mean, I'm not talking about just wriggling. He is throwing punches. He's wrestling them to the ground. He is very, very aggressive. And in the process, of course, he steals one of the officer's tasers, takes the taser off of him, and then finally breaks free from both of them. Think about how aggressive you've got to be to break free from two police officers that are trying to subdue you, trying to arrest you, and you break free of both of them. In the process, you steal their taser, steal a taser. And then as he's running away, they're saying he's 18 feet away, but as he's running away, he turns with the taser, and it looks like he tries to fire the taser. Now, they said that the taser could not be fired. It had already been fired twice, and it was rendered inoperative, and that the police officer should have known that. Well, I don't know that he should have known that. And in the midst of all that melee, I don't know that he knew that that particular taser had been fired twice. I mean, that's asking a lot in the midst of all that, that you know that this taser is absolutely incapable of being fired. And by the way, when he turned and fired it, it looks like it goes off. Something happens there, but they didn't get into that. They didn't talk about that. So here's the first thing that bothers me, the gross overcharging. They charged him with 11 charges, including, by the way, the underlying felony, assault with a dangerous weapon. What? Are you kidding me? That's the underlying felony? You're talking about a police officer? And I think the underlying felony, if I'm not mistaken, has to do with the use of the taser before you even get to the use of the weapon. But don't hold me to that. But that was my impression. That wasn't entirely clear. And then they charge him with discharging his weapon and endangering the lives of others, some sort of trumped up charge that they come up with because one of the bullets went into the fender of a nearby vehicle. Well, in a situation like that, of course, that kind of thing can happen. Thank God nobody else got shot. This would be an even worse situation if that had happened. But that's the first thing. I mean, 11 charges? Are you kidding? And he's now under arrest. They're asking for no bond. I'd like to know, what's the record of this police officer? What is he? Is he in trouble? Is he been in difficulties before? Is he somebody that the department has been watching? Has he been suspended? Hey, because this is really draconian treatment of a police officer. No bond. They want him locked up like he's a danger to the community. Stand by. We'll be back in a moment to talk about this.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
You know, it's one thing to read about voter fraud in a news article. It's quite another to read about it in a court document or legal opinion. Three judges on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals blocked an attempt to allow all voters in the state to vote by mail because of the pandemic. In his concurring opinion, Judge James Ho took the time to cite other judges and legal opinions warning about the dangers of voting by mail. Many citations seem to be making the case against voter IDs by suggesting that in-person voting is much safer than voting by mail. By focusing on the importance of in-person voting, they're also making the case against voting by mail. For example, judges in one case cited Indiana's own experiment with fraudulent voting in the 2003 Democratic primary was a fraud that was perpetuated using absentee ballots. The legal opinion went on to explain that much of the fraud that has occurred in various elections nationwide was actually absentee ballot fraud or voter registration fraud. Now, one brief found extensive problems with absentee ballot fraud in various elections, including one election that was overturned on the basis of absentee ballot fraud. Now, another brief by the Brennan Center argued that when voter fraud was detected, it generally takes the form of organized fraud, including the use of fraudulent absentee or mail-in ballots. Judge Ho even cited their own court opinions that concluded that mail-in ballot fraud is a significant threat, so much so that the potential and reality of fraud is much greater in the mail-in ballot context than in in-person voting. After reading many of these citations and legal opinions, I think it's easy to see why the court ruled against attempts to expand mail-in voting. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Take Kirby and the Point of View team with you on the go with the Point of View app. Search for Point of View Radio at the Apple or Google Play stores.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than eight decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determine that as few as one Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Brian Fisher here. The more time that passes, the worse Neil Gorsuch's ruling looks. Joe Biden holds a rally and nobody comes. If you're looking for systemic racism, look no further than the Democrat Party. D.C. gives us an example of what a world without cops looks like. And Nancy Pelosi's scarf is linked to an empire involved in the slave trade. Next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Now, I want to get to calls as early as I can today because I really want to get your perspective on what you think about this. So the first thing is the gross overcharging of this police officer as if he were a criminal out committing a crime, and in the process, he killed someone. That's the way he's being treated. They want no bond. They want him put in jail. They want him held until trial. And I think they're required to get an indictment from a grand jury. And they're saying that that won't happen until January. So they want him locked up until sometime early next year. And we're still in the middle of the year. We haven't even hit the smack dab in the middle of the year. We haven't even quite gotten there yet. And they want to lock him up and keep him locked up as if he were a threat or a danger to the community at large. I mean, that's ridiculous. But here's the other thing. And I had a hard time believing that I was hearing right. I told you all, I glanced through it as it was rolling, as I was doing some other things, but I was kind of keeping one eye on it. And when it was over, I thought, you know, there was something missing, but I probably missed it. I thought, I didn't hear him acknowledge at all that Rayshard Brooks resisted arrest. I didn't hear him not acknowledge that. And I thought, so I must have missed that. So this morning, I went back and listened to the entire thing from beginning to end. This prosecutor never acknowledged that he resisted or fought with the police. He just said, we noticed he was cooperative. We noticed that he was cordial. I think he used the word jovial. He was jovial. Well, maybe he was. At the beginning, and as they were talking to him, but the moment they began to put handcuffs on him the thing changed completely. I mean, he became highly aggressive. I mean, it's there for all to see. Why wouldn't the prosecutor acknowledge that and say things changed when they began to place him under arrest? Well, the only thing he said that even approaches that was he said they did not follow procedure in telling him that he was being placed under arrest. So it's almost as if he's implying that he wasn't resisting arrest because they didn't tell him that they were placing him under arrest, which once again, I mean, that's preposterous. If a police officer says, turn around, put your hands behind your back. Now, maybe technically, according to the rules in Atlanta, he's required to say, I am placing you under arrest. But you know what that means, right? I mean, you know what that means. In fact, I'm going to tell you all something not very many people know. I was arrested one time. I was living in Massachusetts at the time. And I was just leaving my apartment building. At the time, we were still living in an apartment building, I think we were anyway, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'd come out, and I made a left turn from the right lane. Well, I didn't see any sign saying you couldn't do that, and apparently there was a police officer nearby who didn't like it. We had a police unit in Massachusetts called the Metro Police, and they were really a weird sort of bunch jurisdictionally because they were responsible for certain roads and parks, and it wasn't clear where their jurisdiction began and ended. They had a terrible reputation, though, and they ultimately disbanded them, did away with them. But at any rate, on this particular occasion, I make this left turn and I get pulled over by a cop. And so, you know, he comes over, talks to me, says, you know, you made the left. I said, well, I didn't see any sign saying I couldn't. I mean, I was respectful of anything. I said, but I didn't know it was an illegal turn. It was an illegal turn. And then he said something a little strange to me. He says, you know, that's Metro's corner. And that's the rule. And I said, but aren't we as citizens required to have some notice that something is not permissible? And so, you know, but it wasn't nasty or unfriendly or, you know, he didn't get angry. And I said, I'm not afraid of cops. I just talked to him. You know, I said, wow. I said, because I really didn't know. Well, as it turns out, at that time in Massachusetts, they had a rule that if you had an outstanding speeding ticket, didn't apply for all tickets, parking tickets, but for speeding ticket, if you had an unpaid speeding ticket, you were to be arrested. They ultimately changed that because they realized they were wasting a lot of time in the courts and whatnot, just, you know, on stupid stuff. But it turns out I had a speeding ticket that I wasn't aware of that I hadn't paid. I guess I had it and had forgotten about it. And don't draw conclusions about me speeding. Okay, folks, please. Come on. I hear enough of that from my wife. So at any rate, he says, you know, I'm sitting there. Another police car pulls up. And I thought, okay, I've got a problem. They walk up. They say, well, sir, they were very respectful, very cordial. You know, you have an outstanding speeding ticket and we're required to take you in. And I said, really? Now, I guess at that point, I knew that could happen. I just figured police officers probably just say, go pay the ticket. So at any rate, they said, so would you get out of the car? I got out of the car. I said, would you turn around? I turned around. They said, put your hands behind your back. I did. And they put handcuffs on me, put me back in the car. We were about 5 miles from a police station, the particular police station where they processed me. And the courthouse was not half a mile or a mile from there. So they processed me. I went and sat and told them who I was, gave them the necessary information and all of that. And then they took me over to the courthouse. And they took me over to the courthouse. And I sat in the courthouse, ultimately, and waited until the judge came in. The judge came in and he said, what are you here for? I said, here for a speeding ticket. The judge charged me $25 court costs and said, thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. You can go. Now, that's all that amounted to. Now, I didn't like that, and I didn't like the rule that, you know, of arresting people for outstanding speeding tickets, and they did away with that rule. My point is, I didn't start cussing the cops out. I didn't start fighting them when they started to put handcuffs on me. So I can actually say I've had the experience of having handcuffs put on me. That's the only time in my life it's ever happened, but I've had that experience. You just remain calm. You just go with the program. I didn't think they were going to kill me. I didn't think they were taking me somewhere to murder me. I just figured, okay, I got to get this speeding ticket situation worked out. And I did. I think that probably took all of a couple of hours. I missed a meeting that I was going to, but that took all of a couple of hours of my time. And that was that. So the fact that he doesn't even mention that this man started fighting the cops, that's an important fact, don't you think? You know, I've said I've never had any difficulties with police, and I didn't. I didn't have any difficulties with those cops either. They didn't lay a hand on me. They didn't mistreat me. They didn't hit me, punch me, kick me. They didn't call me by any names. They just basically did what they thought they were required to do. Two police officers did tell me I got stopped by the wrong guy. They said because he's got a reputation for making more arrests for speeding tickets than anybody else in the department. I guess he's looking for it, okay? He likes building up his arrest record. But even he, and they had a little nickname for him. I can't remember exactly what it was. But even he didn't mistreat me. He didn't say anything nasty to me. He didn't treat me in any kind of bad way. So this guy starts fighting the cops. And I'm not saying you deserve to die for that. But shouldn't that be factored into your analysis of what took place? And this prosecutor didn't even mention it. Didn't even mention it. Now, isn't there something wrong with that picture when you don't even mention that? And then they brought up some other things, and I guess we'll find out what the facts are. But they claim that one officer put his foot on Rayshard Brooks' arm, but probably just to make sure that he wasn't going to, if he were conscious or capable of moving, that he wasn't going to grab a weapon or something. And they described that as standing on his body. Well, putting your foot on someone's arm is not the same as standing on their body. You know, to me, this is the impression I got, folks. And then I want to hear from you. The number is 888-589-8840. But this is the impression I got, that they were trying to make this sound like they were out hunting black men. You know, that's the narrative from the left. And they were trying to make it sound like that. He stood on his body, you know, as if they walked over to him. Yeah, we bagged one. And then just stepped up on him and stood. But that's not quite what happened. But he kept using that phrase, stood on his body. Stood on his body. And that would seem a little bit monstrous. Putting your foot on a suspect's arm to try to make sure that he cannot grab hold of any weapon that might be nearby, assuming maybe the taser was nearby or whatever. Instead, they had searched him, so they shouldn't have suspected that he had a weapon. But sometimes, you know, searches don't reveal everything that somebody's got. So, okay, reasonable. There was another officer on television, and he was saying this. He said, I've seen many justifiable shootings. He said, I've investigated many justifiable shootings, that put it that way. He's in charge of a police department. I forget which one. But he said, I've never seen one on video that looked good. He said, they just don't look good. It doesn't look good to see somebody shot, to see somebody. He said, but many of them, those shootings that don't look good, are perfectly legally justifiable. And so what we've got, to me, is mob justice. That's what's happening. We're witnessing mob justice. And I think, frankly, folks, it really does get deeper than that. And I'll share with you my thoughts about that. The number again, 888-589-8840. Hey, don't forget the podcast, because all of our programs are on it. Go to AFR.net if you ever want to listen to a program again. And who wouldn't want to do that? Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
At some time in his life, every person comes face to face with a difficult situation. None of us, regardless of our credentials, are spared of life's trying times. Therefore, any person is richer who has some foundation on which to stand when the storm rages high. How can we best face difficult situations? Well, the first word that's necessary here is dedication. Every person has some basis from which to view life, from which he faces difficult situations. For many, that basis is pure selfishness. What's best for me? What do I want to do? For others, the basis is genuine apathy. They don't care how the difficult situation turns out. But experience shows us that those who best cope with their difficult situations are those who have at the center of their life a genuinely deep and abiding faith in God. Difficult situations aren't near as difficult when a person knows that above all and beyond all is one who can and will guide us in our difficult situations. The author of the 23rd and 27th Psalms was only expressing an attitude shared by countless multitudes. Then, the second word which is necessary here is decision. Study your situation carefully. Explore all possibilities open to you. Then make the decision which seems best. It may not be the decision you desire. In many cases, that option will not be open to you, but it will be the best decision possible in a difficult situation, and that's what you're searching for. Most often, our choices in difficult situations will not be between easy and hard decisions, but between hard and harder decisions. That's the reason they're difficult situations. The difficulty comes not so much in having a hard task to do, but in deciding the best way to do it. We can sympathize with a man who had to divide the eggs into three categories, small, medium, and large. Well, after 2 days, he quit, crying, "Decisions, decisions, decisions." Prayer needs to be a part of our experience prior to making a decision in a difficult situation. Difficult situations are hard enough in themselves, and certainly they are too hard to attempt without the help of He who has all knowledge. The final word in facing difficult situations is determination. Decision should be followed by action, else it only amounts to indecision. Once you make up your mind to act in a difficult situation, then immediately set the wheels in motion to carry out your decision. Perhaps the most miserable person in the world is the one who continually dwells on indecision. He will make up his mind, but he will not follow his decision with determination. He bounces to and fro, continually torn and twisted because of inaction from fear of wrong action. In facing our difficult situations, we must always be open to new truth, new light breaking in to make the path clearer. But likewise, we must be determined to stay with the highest and best route open to us until that new light breaks. We must be determined to do our best in a difficult situation. In the final analysis, that's all that any of us can do in any difficult situation, our best. And when we have done that, it is good enough.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
I'm going to come right to your calls, but consider this. What if I, E.W. Jackson, upon realizing I was going to be arrested for an outstanding speeding ticket, had said, "You're not arresting me for a speeding ticket. That's not fair. I don't agree with that. I'm not," and started fighting those police officers. You say, "Well, what would have happened?" I don't know. I might not be here today. If I started trying to grab their guns or who knows? I certainly would not, but that would have been a life-changing moment. And of course, I would never have done anything like that. But just, I'm just trying to help all of us to think through how that interaction was ultimately in the hands of Rayshard Brooks. And nobody, you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say, if you cooperate with these police officers, and you simply work with them while they're trying to do a very difficult and dangerous job. You make them feel comfortable. You make them feel like you're no threat to them, unless they're just rogues and they're outlaws who shouldn't be wearing a uniform. You're just going to be processed in the normal course, and depending upon the nature of the situation. I said that Rayshard Brooks would have been out of jail the following day and would have had to go back to court probably to report for a DUI. But oh no, the outcome was very, very different. And frankly, Ted Williams, former homicide detective, Dan Bongino, former New York police officer, both of whom happened to be black, have said they believe that charging him at all is a travesty of justice. In fact, Ted Williams said that a taser is potentially deadly. So I want to know what you all think. 888-589-8840, so we can get to these lines early, because I'll tell you, when I watched it, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Okay, let's go to Lynn in Arkansas. Lynn, welcome.
Thank you. Hi. Yeah, hi. I am reading a book, and it's a you may have heard about it. It's called Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. It's talking about how pot is stronger nowadays. And in it, it compares the research on marijuana to research on tasers. And the company said that, you know, there was no danger as far as, like, death or anything like that. But Alex Berenson, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's also got the information about COVID out right now. He used to be a New York Times reporter, but now he's like freelance.
Okay.
And he comes out with a lot of, controversial.
So he has said something about tasers?
Yeah. Bottom line, he said that he researched them in 2014 and that they have a cardiac. They can be dangerous in that sense.
Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
So, I mean, pardon me?
Yeah, go ahead. I said that would make sense. It delivers an electrical charge to the body. That would make sense that it could potentially create a heart arrhythmia or a heart attack. Go ahead, Lynn, finish your point.
Well, just the fact that the defendant, or now he's a defendant, but the policeman that the guy was trying to shoot him with it, I mean, that is a big deal. I mean, yeah. Anyway, so.
Yeah, well, Lynn, look, thank you for the call, Lynn. We appreciate it. Folks, let me say this, and I really hate to say this, but I'm on this program to tell you the truth as I see it. I think this is politics and payback. I really do. I think this is politics and payback. This prosecutor is running for office, running for re-election, so it's politics. But I really believe, if you all remember when O.J. Simpson was acquitted, one of the refrains that I heard from a number of different people, and I think it represented a lot of sentiment, particularly from people on the left, well, they've gotten away with all kinds of stuff. They, meaning quote unquote white people, they've gotten away with all kinds of stuff. Now it's our turn. And that was the way it was framed. To charge this police officer with felony murder is nothing but payback and politics. Let's go to the next call. Let's go to Doug in Missouri. Doug, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, Doug, you're on.
Okay. Well, Mr. Jackson, I really admire your show, and you. I had to disagree with you on this particular situation. That man offered to walk to his sister's house, and it seemed to me that they didn't give him any choice at all. I've been arrested last year for DWI, and I'm white. And I felt threatened. I think it's in the officer's training. We're in tumultuous times right now where anything can ignite a fire. We're out here protesting over this judge that got killed 3 weeks ago was murdered. That man should be up for murder charges, that officer. It's in our training. They only know.
Yeah, of course. Those are. Well, you know what? Well, hold on. Doug, those are two different situations. I think that the consensus from everybody is that the death of George Floyd was a murder. Let's come back to this particular case. Do you think that if a person who is stopped while driving under the influence and is sitting behind the wheel of a car, that person should be allowed to walk home? Is that what you're saying, and that the police officers were wrong not to let him walk to his sister's house?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they escalated the situation by not letting him go to his house, or at least drive him two blocks over to his sister's house.
Well, you know, I used to practice law, and I represented a lot of different clients for DUIs. I never saw a situation. Now, maybe it happened in certain instances, because obviously I don't know of all the cases. I never saw a case where police officers caught somebody behind the wheel of a car under the influence and then let them walk somewhere and didn't charge them. Because if you're behind that wheel, then you've already committed the crime. So while you think that maybe they should have done that and that would have been a nice gesture for them, I don't think that would have been in keeping with the law or in keeping with the policies of Atlanta. And if you start doing that for people, then as far as I'm concerned, then, you know, DUIs are just, if you know you can drive under the influence and the police stop you, you pull over. Oh, let me walk to my sister's house, and that's it. I mean, to me, that opens the floodgates for people to do all kinds of stuff. But so Doug, I'm glad you agree with me most of the time. We're going to agree to disagree on this one. But thank you so much for the call, Doug. We appreciate it. Let's go to Keith in Michigan. Is that Michigan?
Yes, it is Michigan.
All right, great. Good to have you, Keith.
The one of the states that's under Gulag rule.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Whitmer. Or Witless, as you all apparently like to call it out there.
Oh, yeah. So, you were right. The DA is going in Atlanta is going through an election situation, and he's being influenced by the Marxist mob rule that's taking storm through our nation. The one thing that was interesting is, I think it was last year or not too long ago, the DA considered a taser as a deadly weapon. So, in a sense, the perpetrator was shooting a deadly weapon at the police officer. And one thing I have to say is that I give a lot of credence to the police officer. They are in situations that very few of us will ever be into a situation. Those who are in the military will, and sometimes will, face deadly situations. But besides that, police officers in a normal society, civilization as we have, are the ones that are mostly facing the worst of people in society out there.
Keith, you are so right. Thank you for the call, Keith. I mean, police officers face some very, very bad people. And by the way, whatever people say, Rayshard Brooks wasn't exactly an upstanding citizen because he was actually fighting those cops. That's not what people are supposed to do. Back in a moment.
It's the age-old question of quality time versus quantity time. This is Focus on the Family Minute, and here's Ken Davis.
A young man whose dad said to him, "Let's go fishing." They sat all day long and didn't catch a thing. Years later, the man was going through his journal and found a journal of his son. This dad had written in his journal on that day that he took his son fishing, didn't catch a thing, a whole day wasted. He opened the journal to the same day and saw his son's entry. Spent the whole day with my dad. Greatest day of my life.
What a different take on the day. There's no doubt that time spent with a child is never wasted. Find more encouragement today from Ken Davis at familyminute.org.
This Sunday is Father's Day, and this weekend on Encouragement Live, we'll focus on the role of fathers in uncertain times. This is Don Hawkins. Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley of Focus on the Family join me to address the challenges and opportunities fathers face in these difficult times. Plan to join us for Encouragement Live, Saturday at 7:05 p.m. Central, 8:05 Eastern, here on American Family Radio.
Hey, Siri.
Go ahead.
Show me some Christian music streaming apps.
Okay. Here's what I found under Christian music streaming apps.
The AFR app? Isn't that talk shows only?
It was, until recently. Now the new music streaming option plays music 24/7.
Oh, wow.
God is good.
All the time.
And all the time.
God is good.
Download the AFR app today at AFR.net.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims who lose everything.
It's truly a blessing. I really don't have the words to express.
And yet, they see a glimmer of hope when a volunteer shows up.
Building the home, that's the second reason we're here. The number one reason is to share the gospel and give them hope.
It's everything that's right in America. I mean, it really represents the best that we have to offer.
That's one of the main reasons for doing it, is being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus and coming out and working with so many wonderful volunteers.
I just feel like it's important in this day and age to teach a child how to serve.
Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved. Submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well.
I love coming in the job room because you can see these pieces of paper, they aren't just a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a family that's hurting, and it's a gospel opportunity.
And I just thank God, you know, for this moment. I mean, I'll be back in my home, and I know it's going to be awesome.
Come love others with 8 Days of Hope.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Yeah, Fulton County DA Paul Howard has charged Officer Garrett Rolfe with 11 counts, and he's charged the other officer, by the way, Devin Brosnan, with 3 felony counts. And I think they've lightly charged him, but his 3 felony counts, he's going to trial. He's done as a police officer, but they're going to charge him with the lesser crimes. Now, why are they charging him at all? He didn't fire the weapon. This is just a mess. But they're going to charge him with less so that he will turn state's evidence against Officer Garrett Rolfe. They're also saying that he was heard to say, "I got him," afterwards, and that's supposed to be some sort of indication of malice aforethought, I guess, and one of the reasons why they're charging him. They're also charging him with some kind of damage, felony damage to property, and they just really... Yeah, first-degree criminal damage to property, several counts of violating his oath as a police officer, including the one of not saying, "I am placing you under arrest," which, here again, yikes. I just feel for law enforcement officers all over this country right now, because not only do you have this hue and cry by Black Lives Matter asking to defund and dismantle police and basically claiming that all police officers and all police forces are systemically racist. But now you've got administrations like this asking potentially, now they have said that they're going to ask for it, and I would hope they wouldn't be that stupid, although can't put anything past them right now, but felony murder carries the potential of the death penalty. The death penalty. So it's just, it's beyond the pale, folks. It really is. It is beyond the pale. Okay, you've been very patient. Chuck in North Carolina. Chuck, welcome.
Yes, Bishop. Love your show. I admire you so much, being God's servant. I apologize for commenting on a different subject, but it's the
That's
same.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Evil. It's the same evil power behind it. And that's the recent Supreme Court justice ruling.
Yeah.
I have a theory on those justices making a 180-degree turn at the last minute. I don't believe they were bribed. I don't think they needed the money. But it kind of goes in line with the desperation of the left to do anything, hurt anybody, to accomplish their agenda. I believe they were threatened. I believe their families were threatened. That's just a theory I have. I can't explain it any other way.
Well, you know, Chuck, you may be right, but Chief Justice John Roberts, to me, has been a weak read from the very beginning, and I just don't think he's reliably conservative at all. I think these people, and Neil Gorsuch, by the way, I read an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning that pointed out that he has violated every other decision he's ever made. He has always said, you cannot define words that were written years ago as if they were written yesterday and apply the present context and imbue them with meaning that they did not have at the time they were written. And yet he went and he did just that. I mean, so I don't know whether he's just a liar and he just fooled everybody or whether, as you put it, somebody put pressure on him. But don't forget, you know, the desire to be accepted and the desire to be able to get invited to the cocktail parties. You know, I don't go to events at Harvard. I'm a Harvard Law School graduate. I don't go to them. Why? Because I know there aren't going to be any people there likely who will relate to me. In fact, there'll be a lot of people there who will hate me. So what's the point? But, you know, there's a lot of people. There are a lot of people who want that acceptance. They want to be invited to the cocktail parties. They want to be invited to the swank events. And they want to feel like, yeah, I'm one of you. And I don't know. Maybe that's Neil Gorsuch. I think it's clearly John Roberts. So I don't know what the explanation is. I just know, that as far as I'm concerned, as I said in my Facebook post, Neil Gorsuch has betrayed the Constitution, betrayed our country, and betrayed the president who appointed him. Let's go back to your calls. Let's go to Don in Texas. Don, welcome. Don,
hey,
you're
how
on.
Are you, Bishop?
Great.
Good,
how are you?
How are you, sir?
Thank
fantastic,
you.
Fantastic, fantastic. God bless you, and God bless the police of the United States of America. Well, let me start off with, I am just completely sick of all the misinformation that's out there. You related to the prosecutor saying that he never said that he fought back. This is how they do it. They put out their blurbs and their half facts. And then when you really look at the facts, these gentlemen should not be charged, certainly not with 11 counts, 11 felonies. Come on. It's a hard job, and more people will turn away from it. More good people will turn away from this job, all because, and it has really, it's sad to say, it has nothing to do with people being repressed or anything like that. This is all the Democratic Party. This is all like the Clinton Foundation and people like Ted Turner spinning the world into chaos so we don't pay attention to what's really going on.
Yeah, Don, let's face it. These people have a different vision for our country. Their vision is not a constitutional republic, is not individual liberty. Their vision is really a totalitarian nation in which they are in charge and they control everything and everybody because, of course, we'll all be so much better off when it's that way. And that's how communism takes root, when people think, well, if we just give them complete control over everything and everybody, we'll have a society of social justice. And what we'll have is a nightmarish, ghoulish, genocidal country, and that's exactly, in my view, what they'll give us if we don't stop them. So, and we're going to keep fighting the good fight of faith, and we're going to keep voting and staying active and speaking up until ultimately the American people wake up and realize, you know, these people are really, really out to destroy everything this country represents. And right now they're using racial division as one of their chief tools. And we just can't buy into it. We simply cannot buy into it. Don, thanks for the call. Let's go to Louise in Texas. Louise, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
I was going to say, I just love your show and the truth that you project and just the godliness that you bring forth. So I wanted to talk about Brooks deal in Atlanta. I agree 1,000% with everything that you have highlighted and you have said. He resisted arrest. I never mentioned that. I watched that on TV yesterday, the whole deal where they were talking about it and everything. And they never mentioned that. There was a lot of things that they did not mention, exactly what you brought forth and projected a while ago. And I just think it's a deal that everything is just so upside down, and there's so much unrest and chaos and rioting and looting, and everything's going on because everything is just, you know, now everything is nitpicked. But, yes, it's political. It's political and payback, exactly what you said a while ago. And I also want to say one other thing. In Houston, this last week, there was an incident that happened, and it was taped on a store video machine, whatever you call a tape, and it showed where this man had gone into a convenience store. He had bought a few groceries, and he said four young black guys walked in, and he was standing in line, and they just walked in front of him, and he said, "This is what lines are for." And they all walked out, but they were waiting for him. And so when he went out, they jumped him, and they beat him down to the ground. And then as he sat there, another guy walked out of the store and come over there and kicked him and in the face.
Kicked him in the face. Yep, I saw it. I saw that video. And you're right. This stuff. And then one of them, by the way, said, "Black Lives Matter." See, and folks, listen, Louise, let me get another call in here. But thank you, Louise, for highlighting that. See, this is what I'm saying, folks. This is why, in my view, Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. But Black Lives Matter as an organization is a demonic thing. And that's what it breeds. It breeds that kind of disregard for other human beings. All human beings matter to God. And that's got to be the message. Rather than separating us out like some people are special. And by the way, and promoting this lie that the police are out hunting down black men. I went through the data yesterday. I don't have time to do that again today. But based on a lie, turning everybody against each other and turning everybody against the police. Lord help us. Let's go to Jason in Mississippi. Jason, I think you're going to take us out of the program. So go ahead, Jason. Jason, you're on.
Hi, Bishop. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Jason. You've only got about a minute or less, but go right ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say I've been arrested before for DUI back 15 years ago, and the officer actually hit me while I had handcuffs on, but I deserved it. I had some things coming out of my mouth that got me sent over the hood of that police car. I want to move forward and say my son is a police officer today in Memphis, Tennessee, and we pray for him every day. And, you know, Jesus was persecuted while he was on earth, and us Christians is all they have to persecute anymore. All we can do is pray for this country, man. It's a mess right now.
Amen. Well, it is, Jason, but God is hearing our prayers. Jason, thanks for the call. And by the way, let me just clarify, even if a person says some nasty things to a police officer, he doesn't have the right to hit him for it. So sorry that happened to you, Jason. But and by the way, I don't know whether Jason's white or black or other, but I don't think it has anything to do with color anyway. When people start mouthing off at police, they're human beings too. And you might get a reaction that might be wrong, but nevertheless, it's human. Well, that's going to do it for us. And you're right, Jason. We got to keep praying for America. But remember this, folks. We cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.